Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're joined by Michael Woolman. Michael Woolman is Director of Analytics and Data at Betway Group. Now, thank you so much for taking the time to do this, Mike. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show.
No, it's a pleasure to be here. Great to talk about it.
Yeah, excellent. Let's just dive in. So I want to find out about your, you know, your life growing up, really, and I'm interested to find out if you've always had, you know, a passion or an interest in this field as you were growing up.
I always liked statistics. Like I always found them interesting. My friends always had kind of running jokes that I always had a stat to hand about something.
Right.
I always just enjoyed knowing the numbers behind anything. That was always the way. It helped me kind of understand something better. That definitely has been throughout my whole life. It's always been there.
And then also, can we just touch upon your career journey? I just want to find out what that journey's been like. And would you say that you navigated your career journey, or did it just kind of fall into place?
No. It's been the exact opposite of linear. Which is, I think that's how things are these days. There's very few vocations anymore. And I think someone used a term once, which I thought was really good, which is like this term like second jobber. And I've always thought, up until recently, where like universities are offering courses in analytics, courses in data science. I mean, there were no courses in these things. You just did maths or something maths related.
Yeah.
There were none of these courses like 10, 15 years ago. When did I graduated in 2007. So there weren't any of these courses. But people kind of got into analytics, unless you kind of joined an investment bank and you became like an analyst, which meant so many different things.
Mm.
But analysts, in terms of what we think of an analyst, it was always like a kind of a second job. You know, as analysts, a company, they used to be like an analyst shoved in a corner.
Mm.
And, you know, they would be the person you went to pull the numbers on something. But analysts as we think about analysts, it's not understanding the what, it's understanding the why. Very few people come straight out of university and say, I want to be an analyst. I want to go into data. Well, now they do, but you know, 5-10 years ago, they really didn't. So it's really interesting to see how that's changed. So I definitely didn't go into this. I was lucky enough to do a grad scheme. So I did the BP grad scheme, did a few different roles across the company, spent about 5 years at BP after doing the grad scheme. And that was a great experience. Like, I mean, if you want experience understanding data, go work on a trading floor. You learn a lot from just the people being around you, understanding how to interpret information, how to process information, like literally like the grunt work, you know, really understanding, you know, how do you structure data? How do you make sure data is structured in a way so you can access it quickly? Basics, you know, real basics. Because if you don't structure it properly and you don't get the data fast enough, people are going to, you know, they're not going to be happy with you. So that was a really, really good training ground. And then I left BP. I just wanted to try something different. I went to Virgin Media. I call that kind of my career speed bump. I did something that I was not qualified to do.
Really?
At all. I went into product development. I just felt like a bit of a change.
Mm.
And I was not qualified to do that job at all. And I learned a lot very, very quickly about what I was not good at. And then, you know, I didn't spend very long there. I spent about a year there. And then I met someone at Wind Technologies, which is part of the Betway Group, because I saw a job posting for, I think, product. And they said, I told them my background and they said, no, you don't want to work in product. You need to go do analysis. You need to work for this guy this guy, Kevin. You need to go work for him and you need to go learn analysis and you need to learn about this business. And so I started working there as an analyst and learned a lot really, really quickly and still learning a lot really, really quickly. And that was May 2013.
Wow.
I joined here and it's just kept And I've done so many different roles here, and it's been amazing to learn different things throughout my journey here and be given the trust to try different things and fail different things as well. But the core of it has always been around data.
Yeah.
And analysis and insight and how to really utilize data in the best possible way. And that's been kind of the core throughout my 8 years here.
Yeah, incredible. What a story. And also there's a lot that, you know, we could pick apart here, and it's so interesting. There's a lot to speak about. And one thing that I find fascinating is that, you know, I bring this question up a lot on the podcast, and it seems that no one really actively navigates their career.
I've got a huge respect for anyone who at the age of 18 who goes and wants to be a doctor,
yeah,
or a lawyer or a teacher. And they know that's what they want to do, and they stick with that and they do that. I mean, that's lifelong learning. I mean, listen, everything's lifelong learning, but
yeah,
you're committing to that at 18, knowing that it's going to be years before you get there. I mean, architecture is all these different things that take years and years and years of study just to get to the bottom. But there's not many careers like that.
Yeah.
Everything else, I think at the age of 18 or 16 or whatever you decide you want to leave school and go work, I think very few people know this is what I want to do in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, some people when they're 30, they don't have a clue what they want to do for their career. And some people, yeah, when they're 40, 50, 60, still have no idea what they want to do for their career. So it's just really interesting. And especially I find it interesting with technology, because you kind of can kind of start in one area and then move to a completely different area and try different things and then progress quite quickly in some areas. And you can kind of jump around. Do you agree with that?
Completely. And I think taking it back to, so I'm going to keep taking you back to data.
Yeah, sure.
The beauty of knowing how to, the beauty of understanding data, and I've had a couple of people who have worked for me over the course of the last 8 years who are running like different departments now that have arguably nothing to do with data, but at the same time, everything to do with data. And these are exceptional leaders who have left analytics and data engineering and these other teams and gone into, yeah, other parts of the business and been really, really successful because they understand the value of information and how to use information and how to process information. It's just, it's such a transferable skill that I think is underappreciated by a lot of people. A lot of people look at data and they get terrified of it. But if you can learn how to harness data and understand data, it puts you in such a powerful position.
Would you say that that's the most important aspect of being successful in the industry then, is, you know, understanding the value of data?
No, funnily enough, I think ultimately it's a people business. You can be amazing with data, but if no one wants to work with you, like, who cares?
Well, that's true in so many industries.
This is a people business, yeah, more than anything. You can be the most gifted person, but if no one's, you know, one thing I tell analysts at interviews, you know, what makes a good analyst? You know, obviously, you know, what I own in my department spans multiple different disciplines, but from the purely the analytics perspective, what makes a good analyst is really two things, in my opinion, is you've got to have something to say and the ability to say it. If you've got the ability to say it, so if you've got something to say, that means you're a good analyst and you found something interesting.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the ability to say it and communicate that idea, communicate that, yeah, answer, and no one's going to listen to you, who cares about the first part?
Yeah.
So that's why fundamentally the most important thing is a people business. It's people skills. It's a people business, because you're not going to solve problems as an analyst or a data engineer or DevOps or a data scientist.
Yeah.
You're going to highlight them and you're going to do part of the journey, but it's a team effort. You know, if you create, you know, a data point and that data point can only touch our customer through one of our front ends or one of our marketing systems or something like that, you rely on other people. And that's why that's the most important part and most important skill.
God, it's interesting, isn't it? And you know, we've spoke, this is around what it takes to be successful in data. But what does it take to be a successful manager or leader in data?
It is really hard.
Yeah.
It is really hard because you've got to have a really, really good team around you. Mm-hmm. And that takes so much time. That doesn't happen overnight. And you've got to put in the effort to really trust that team around you, because that's the only way you're going to scale your team, by learning how to delegate, training those people so you can delegate to them, and then trusting those people to do what they think is right, not what you want them to do. Because the whole thing, you know, either tell me what to do or how to do it, but don't tell me both, you know. So it's building that team around you that I think is the hardest part about being a manager, because it takes time. It's not that it's impossible to do. It just takes time, and you've got to have patience in order to do that. And there's probably, you know, when you're building a team, there's probably, you know, a year or 2 years where you're doing everything yourself. Yeah. Because you're building your team around you, and that team isn't ready for you to hand the stuff off to them yet. Mm. But when they are, that's when magic really happens. Yeah. Because I've seen, you know, different teams grow. And what's amazing, and going back to the kind of when that magic happens, is when you get scale on top of scale. Yeah. So when you create a framework and you see that framework working for talent development, analytical processes, analytical skills, communication methods, and you see people saying things that you said 2 years ago, and they're then taking that, but they're making it better. So we started a training program kind of a year and a half, 2 years ago, you know, about 6 months before kind of the first lockdown. And it was a version one of this training program that we wanted to do. And now people in the team are turning around to me and saying, you know, we actually think this isn't good enough. Wow. We have these ideas to make it better. That's for me is the best part, when yeah. people are kind of coming to you and saying, you know what you thought of 2 years ago? Yeah, we know how to make it better. That's the best. Yeah. That's the best part about being a manager. But that's the hard thing to get to. You know, that's where you want to get to. When people who are working for you are telling you how we can make something better. That's what you want.
This is interesting, because from speaking to you, it comes across that you have absolutely no ego whatsoever with your team, and you know.
I definitely do, and I've had really? Some very, very good. No, I know. I've had some very, very good mentors who have helped just manage that. You know. I'm not even joking. Like, you know, if early on in my career as a manager, you know, ego was something I, you know, struggled with, you know, and, you know, I think I remember having kind of a feedback session. And I think the word dictator was used, you know, really? More than wow. one occasion, not even joking. This is going back 5-6 years. And it's really important to hear that, because it makes you so mindful of how you treat people. And, you know, it's the whole thing. I can't remember where the quote came from. You know, it's not what you said. It's not what you say. It's how you say it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's both, but you learn to put your ego to the side, and it's not about who's right. It's about what's right. And that takes time, I think, as a manager. And very few people kind of are born to just kind of know, yeah, put your ego to the side, and that's when the magic happens. You know, I know I had to be told, you know, long time ago, you know, just, yeah, put your ego to the side. So no, I'm not perfect. I promise you. Ego is definitely there. It's always there. You can't get away from it.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, you mentioned mentors there, and can you tell us a little bit about them and how they came about and how they've helped you on your career?
I've been lucky enough to have a few. You know, my father's kind of definitely kind of, you know, in terms of kind of leadership skills, you know, going to that, you know, it's not about who's right, what's right. That definitely came from him and still does. And it's about you know, treating people with respect and just all these little things that you grow up with, you know. So that's kind of, you know, influence number one, always will be. But throughout this particular company and previous companies I've worked for, I've always been lucky enough to have really, really good mentors.
Yeah.
And not officially, there's no like official mentor title attached. I've just had people who just a really good sounding board. You know, I've had really good people who are just willing to kind of listen to me talk rubbish for, you know, sometimes hours on end and just talk it out. It's so important to talk it out. And that helps you develop as a leader. And still helps me develop as a leader. And I've still got some of those mentors that I can call on when I'm stuck. And, you know, whether it's a moral dilemma or a employment thing or a work thing or anything, I've got a handful of people that I can call, that I can trust to just talk through these problems and just talk it out.
They're very much your mentors and how they've helped you kind of develop as a leader. But where else do you look for resources to learn about leadership and, you know, top level management?
No, I read a lot.
Right.
When the team was much smaller, I think for about 3 years, I used to give the team a book every Christmas, but then the team got much bigger and I just couldn't afford to do that anymore. But I used to give people books. And funnily enough, like one book that really, I mean, we took our training program straight out of Ray Dalio's Principles book. It's such a good book.
Wow.
And you know, his DOTS framework, you know, we've not to its full extent that they talk about it in their company, but we've taken that and taken parts of it and utilized it. It's really, really good. And then just books about leadership, but like leadership in sports,
right?
You know, like the Agassi book is great. Right. Open, you know, it's, you really understand just how much goes through stuff. It's just understanding that mindset, you know, and understanding how much psychology influences everything.
Yeah.
So the Agassi book is great. The Nike book is just so good.
Really? I've not read that.
It's absolutely fantastic. Probably the best. And then the one I read recently, what was it called? Ride of a Lifetime, about the last CEO of Disney. That was just a great book about leadership. And I kind of was reading that and I was trying to draw parallels with my kind of the way I think about my career. And it was just, that was also just a great book as well. But just reading really good kind of biographies about people I look up to, kind of get that insight. And then podcasts have been like a revelation as well.
Oh, yeah.
You get to be that fly on the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
In a room with really, really smart people.
Yeah.
I don't listen to, but I listen, since lockdown, I listen to kind of rubbish podcasts, but in like, you know, like they're almost like reality TV podcasts, but you still get like, for example, like my favorite one is, so Sports Wars and Business Wars.
Right.
Two of my favorite podcasts. And they're just told in a really kind of comical way.
Yeah.
Really good. Really, really good. Yeah. But I think that's probably it.
It's funny with podcasts, isn't it? Because, you know, I follow Lex Friedman, if you're aware of him.
Who's there?
Lex Friedman.
No.
He worked as an engineer with Elon Musk on the Tesla cars. And he's got his own podcast. And it's like some of the episodes are over 3 hours long. And you think, you know, if there's a film that's 3 hours long, I'll just be like, no, I'm never going to watch that. But if it was a podcast episode where it's just two men sitting opposite each other talking for 3 hours, I'm completely fine
Amazing.
With it.
There's one other thing that I'd probably mention, which was really good. I mean, 2019, I was lucky enough, I went to South by Southwest.
Oh, amazing.
With someone I work with as well. And it was like 4 days and it was just like, it was a holiday for the mind. Like it was amazing. And we got to see these amazing people, like got to see Trevor Noah speak. We got to see Tim Ferriss speak. We got to see like loads of these influential people in the flesh. And it was just like sitting kind of watching podcasts, you know, for 4 days, but in the best, I know that sounds really boring, but in the best possible way, you know, and you're in Austin and you're surrounded by other weird, curious people. You know, it's I'd highly recommend anyone to kind of go do that.
Oh, that's
when the world opens up.
Yeah. Oh God, that's cool. That's cool. I don't know if cool is the right word, but I think it's cool.
Yeah.
But you know, like obviously the past year, it's been a real struggle for managers and leaders because, you know, teams have had to work remotely and it's been, you know, a real struggle on people's mental health. And, you know, I just want to find out, because obviously that happened really quickly. That happened overnight where you had to react to this kind of thing. And would you say that you were in a position that was prepared for that to happen? And, or did you feel prepared?
I don't think anyone was prepared.
Yeah.
But luckily enough, our leadership team at the time, I think in January, saw this coming. And they ran fire drills. And they basically said, right, today, that whole department's working from home. I want to know any issues anyone has, and I want it fixed. And they did that every day for like 3 weeks.
Wow.
So when the lockdown, and I think this was like January or February, it's like a month before lockdown hit.
Yeah.
It was actually amazing kind of foresight. So when lockdown actually hit, at least I know from my departments, everyone had a laptop. And if they didn't have a laptop, they had access to a virtual machine. Mm-hmm. Everyone could work from home as soon as lockdown hit. From what I remember, maybe have been one or two, but from what I remember, doing these kind of fire drills of like working from home fire drills.
Right.
And because of that, I think we were about as ready as we could be.
Mm. And then what have you done to like kind of help motivate your team over that period of time, over like the past year or so, whilst working remotely? Because it's very, very different working remotely to them working in person. I mean, some people have said there's some things they can do, which is just keep in really regular contact, but everyone's different.
Yeah, it's really hard. Like, you know, we tried a few different things. You know, a lot of people, you know, don't like meetings.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
How do you keep in regular contact remotely without having meetings?
Yeah.
It's really hard.
Yeah.
So, and we try and have as few meetings as possible. We have like these big meetings. There's like all hands meetings. I'll have leadership meetings. That's for it from the meetings perspective. And then, you know, it's just trying to proactively reach out to people.
Yeah.
And knowing that people are okay. And the company sets up really, really good events. You know, they've got regular kind of meditation over Teams. They've got HIIT classes over Teams.
Oh, cool.
But I don't think anyone's done this perfectly. I don't think there is a way to do this perfectly. I think it's really hard. I think the challenge is going to be kind of, okay, what happens now? And
yeah,
you know, we're navigating that journey as much as ever anyone else is. But I don't think anyone can do what we're currently doing perfectly. It's really hard.
It is. It's incredibly tough because every team is unique in their own way. Every team is different. And then within those teams, you have individuals. You know, some
Absolutely.
Might be extremely eccentric and what's the word for it now? Extroverted. And some people might be introverted. But how do you look after those people? They're so different, you know, especially during this time where everyone's feeling a lot of stress.
Yeah,
How on earth as a manager and a leader do you look after all those people? You can't blanket them under one umbrella.
Well, I think that's where the beauty of having a really good leadership team around you is.
Yeah.
You know, I don't directly manage that many people. I directly manage, I think, less than 10 people. But obviously, they then manage, you know, people, and they manage people. I think the key is having a really good leadership team around you who are leaders themselves, and they lead their teams. I think if you're trying to manage every single person who works for you, then I mean, you're going to fail. You're setting yourself up for failure.
Yeah.
And the key is having a really, really good team around you.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And it'll be really interesting to see what it's like. And, you know, even in the next year when we're coming out of this and what hiring will look like and what, you know, the ratio of working from home to working in the office will be like, and all that kind of thing is still all up in the air, really. I mean, companies are still having to make big decisions now about how they move forward. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's. I'm very curious to see what other people are going to be doing. Very curious.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I just want to wrap things up now, Michael, if that's all right with you. I've got one more question here, and it's more about, you know, I want to look at the positives of your career. So what's your greatest achievement throughout your career as a leader? And what are you most proud of? It's quite a difficult question to answer on the spot.
But. Yeah, no, listen, I think that there's one thing that sticks out, which I think I like to think of in a couple of areas I've created from scratch. I've created something sustainable where I know I've got really good bench strength around me. So, you know, when I go on holiday, I can go on holiday. And when someone who works for me goes on holiday, they can go on holiday. I know that sounds stupid, but it's so important. You know, you talked about mental health a couple of times, you know, like 5 years ago, that was not the case. Mm. 5 years ago, I had to make sure things got done, as in like I would have to do them.
Wow.
Being able to actually trust your team to do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
For me, that's such a huge achievement.
Yeah.
I can talk about tech. I can talk about, you know, what we've achieved technically. I think we've achieved some amazing stuff on the technology side, but we're going to keep on doing that because of what I just explained. That's a byproduct of having really, really good bench strength and a really good team around you.
Well, it's been so interesting chatting to you today, Mike. I really appreciate it. And, you know, it's been fascinating.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been fascinating. So, yeah, thank you so much once again. I've really enjoyed it. And, yeah, take care and we'll speak to you soon.
Good to meet you, Ben.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.